This is listener-supported public radio for the Central Kenai Peninsula. KDLL, Kenai Soldotna, 91.9 FM. I'm Jenny Nyman, and it's time for the Kenai Conversation. Digging for razor clams has been closed on East Cook Inlet beaches due to low abundance since 2015. Scientists have been collecting a lot of data to try and quantify the sluggish recovery of those razor clam populations and to see if there's a responsible way to open up limited opportunities for harvest. In this hour, we're going to hear from Lower Cook Inlet Area Management Biologists with the Alaska Department of Fish and Game Sport Fish Division, Mike Booz and Holly Dixon, all about our razor clams. This is from a Wildlife Wednesday presentation by the Alaska Wildlife Alliance.
For those of you that don't know us, I'd give you just a little bit more background on us here in the Homer office. As both managers and researchers, we have a pretty intimate knowledge of, you know, the whole process. I think that's a really big distinction. That's a little bit different than other locations within fish and game. My timing showing up here in Homer working for the department is on a time scale that's really important with razor clams. I've been with this process and seeing the change kind of firsthand, both as a user and as a biologist. And this story that we're going to unfold here tonight, it's a heartbreaker, really. And it's something that's near and dear to us, and we've invested a lot of time with, you know, trying to really understand. And so a lot of the assessment work that you'll see here were started on scratch pieces of paper sitting at my desk trying to, you know, puzzle over how best to really think about how to do these assessments. Holly's time with starting with the department happened at a pretty critical time in our refining of our monitoring with razor clams as well. But we're not just razor clam researchers, you know, we're highly involved with all the sport fisheries here. I think for those that are here on the Kenai Peninsula, you know, over the last couple of decades, we've seen really large changes in productivity of all of our sport fish stocks. So shellfish is not an exception to that. And so let's get started. Up first, Holly will walk us through a timeline of the events prior to the sport and personal use fishery closing here in East Cook Inlet.
Okay, so I'm going to get us started here back in the 1950s. You know, prior to the late 1950s, there was limited highway access to the Kenai Peninsula from Anchorage. So it was really around that time that more than just local Kenai Peninsula residents started participating in this fishery. The main access points to the East Cook Inlet fishery, the two major ones being Nanilchik and Clam Gulch. So more people started coming to the peninsula. The fishery grew through the 1970s and continued to grow through the mid-1990s. The peak harvest and effort in this fishery really reached its peak in the early 90s. The catch per unit effort, or really you can think of it as the number of clams that a digger would take off the beach each day that they went. So that peaked slightly earlier. You can see that averaged about almost 40 clams per digger in the peak in the late 80s, early 90s. So through the early 2000s, this fishery really maintained a fairly level harvest and effort. In the mid 2000s, we began to see a decline. Around this time, we also noticed a decline in the size and age composition of the clams that were harvested in this fishery. And then we got to 2010. So there were some warning signs by this point when we had a storm event that a lot of you probably know about. A lot of people like to ask us about. So there was a high surf event on the Nanilchik beaches that left a bunch of adult clams dead on top of the sand. And then the following year, we happened to begin our refinement of our razor clam monitoring. So we'll get into that a lot more later, but basically we began doing abundance surveys annually. We started those at Nanilchik South annually in 2011. It was actually the highest adult abundance we had ever surveyed. This was just after that storm. we surveyed through 2012, and in 2013, we could see the adult abundances were severely declined from what they had been. 2013 was also the first year that we restricted these beaches. So the Nelchik beaches had their bag limit restricted in 2013. In 2014, all east side beaches had their bag limit reduced, and the Nelchik beaches were completely closed. And that progressed to 2015 with all beaches on the east side of Cook Inlet closed by emergency order, which we've continued to do each year since then.
Okay, really quickly, just to talk about our historical monitoring so we can put in perspective these data that we're using now. Primarily, the historical data were the sport fishery data. We had a periodic abundance data starting in the mid-80s, and then some biological data. The sport harvest data that we had was beach-specific for effort and harvest to two particular beaches. And we also had department collected hand dug samples that were intended to represent the size and age composition of the harvest. And that got started in the early 60s at Clam Gulch. That's something that we had. And we also were able to produce some harvest rates estimates starting in the late 80s with the abundance data that we had. Okay, and then so these abundance surveys that we started collecting kind of became apparent that we needed to have a little bit more information to better understand the harvest and increased effort and shifts between effort from Clam Gulch to Nanilchik beaches. And so there were periodic abundance surveys started in the late 80s. And then biological data that we have has come both from our hand dug samples to represent the size and age composition of the harvest, but we also have had a couple master's graduate students work through here that have looked at growth rates of East Cook Inlet razor clams and have assessed the timing of the spawning. And so those have been good contributions to the historical data.
Okay, so jumping into abundance surveys to start. So you can see the metal ring there that someone's about to pull out of the sand, and then the water blasting out of the fire hose. So we use the fire hose and funnel the water through a wand at the end to emulsify the substrate inside these metal ring plots. So once it all turns to liquid, these clams float to the surface, we can capture them. And we use that to estimate the number and the density of these rings. We move out in a methodical fashion on our study design. And we've got the boat out just beyond the surf with the water pump that, you know, provides the water to keep the survey going. So we start with drawing a study area on these beaches. And so we do that by drawing a line at the water and a line at the gravel line. It's where the steep gravelly part of the beach meets the flat sandy intertidal part. And then the water line's at an extreme low tide. So we draw those lines and create a polygon that we call our study area. So then we need to divide our study area into smaller areas to estimate the abundance and density within. So we draw 50-foot beach strips or stratum starting at the gravel line and progress out towards the water line. Depending on the size of the beach, we can get out to stratum 32. And so then we go to these study areas and we conduct a survey. So we start at the gravel line, we get out as far as the water recedes on the tide that day, and we try to sample in each stratum as we go. Within each stratum, we have a handful of plots. We try to sample at least three plots in each stratum, but some of them are completely skipped, and that's due to the tide moving too fast for us to keep up with on the way out, or covering these up on our way back in as we move back and forth on the beach. So yeah, within each stratum, we're trying to sample three to seven plots to detect a clam, and the GPS, so we mark our survey location as we go. After we fully emulsify the substrate in a ring, we drag the ring, you know, through the hole we've just created. That helps grab more of the clams that will be floating on the surface. And then we measure and age every clam that we capture as we move along on the survey.
Okay, before we get into the abundance estimates, just a couple of thoughts with the methodology or study design to assess abundance on these beaches that Holly just went over. I think it's really important to note that, you know, these surveys are only conducted when the sandy intertidal is exposed on the beach. So we're working only on minus tides and kind of a slave to the tide. You know, the tide waits for no man or woman. So these surveys last for 5 continuous hours once the sand's exposed on the start of the outgo, usually around the +5 or +4 on these beaches. We're chasing water the whole time and continuing to sample. And so the sampling design that Holly illustrated, it's really important to realize that we're trying to use a limited amount of sampling to estimate the abundance to a larger area. So anyways, thanks.
Okay, so to actually accomplish that, we do our survey, we come back, we have this data. And so to estimate the number of clams in a section of this beach, we want to calculate the average density of the clams in each stratum or each 50-foot wide beach strip. So to calculate that average density, we start with taking the total number of clams we captured in the survey, divide it by the total number of plots within each stratum on a particular transect. So we sampled 3 plots there. And so let's just say we captured 12 clams. So 12 clams over 3 plots gives us 4 clams per plot. That's our sampling density. But we really want to know how many are there in the area. So to expand it to square meters, each plot is 1/2 a square meter. So the math's pretty simple. Multiply it by 2. And, you know, in the stratum 8 on that transect, that gives us a density of 8 clams per square meter. So then we're going to zoom out to look at the beach as a whole. So let's say we just did 3 transects for this beach. So we just calculated that together. We got 8 clams per square meter. The middle one, we'll say we got 1/2 clam per square meter. And at the last one, 2 clams per square meter. So now we just need to average those densities for that strata and add them together and get 10.5 clams per square meter. And since we sampled that strata 3 times, we'll just divide it by 3. And that'll give us an average density in that strata of 3.5 clams per square meter. So now we've got a density for 1 stratum on the beach, and we are going to multiply that by the area estimate of that strata. So this one in particular happens to be 19,900 square meters. So multiply that by 3.5 clams and you get 69,900 clams in that stratum. So now we have to look at the whole beach again. We need to do that for every strata and then add it together. So Ninilchik South in 2020, what we actually sampled, get 331,000 adult razor clams on Ninilchik South in 2020.
Just quickly, we've talked about our refinement of the methods and the abundance surveys where we've really focused our effort to give us more information to really assess the status of East Cook Inlet razor clams. The first thing we did was we transitioned from periodic abundance surveys at Clam Gulch or Ninilchik to consistent annual abundance surveys at Ninilchik starting in 2011. And in 2014 at Clam Gulch. And this mostly happened through a collaboration with Alaska Pacific University, FAST Lab, Professor Brad Harris. Each spring has brought down a small army of students and faculty to help support us in doing these abundance surveys. They're very labor intensive, and compared to the staffing that we had historically, it's night and day. So we have an army compared to a small crew before. A big part of the change with including APU is being able to conduct all the abundance surveys in a shorter period of time. And we've focused on doing those abundance surveys in the spring prior to when most of the harvest would occur if the fishery was open. And so that gives us really good abundance information leading up to a fishery. We also have more intensive sampling with, you know, this army of students. This intensive sampling on a given beach, say Ninilchik South, that's 1 mile long and 1/2 mile wide. Historically, we had 3 transects on that beach. Now we're up to 6 transects on that beach. And so it just gives us we're sampling more area and more strategically, which has really given us better estimates than we've had before. We've also maximized our efficiency. This is just something we always do in science. We're always looking how to do things better, and this one will never end, but we've made a lot of improvements without getting into the details of the survey. And then given our experience and the amount of time that we're spending with razor clams, we've also progressed to be able to collect more biological data from every clam. Holly mentioned, you know, that we're measuring in aging, where historically we just measured the length of every clam. Now we're aging every clam on the beach as well. And then a big one just for the efficiency of the overall process, we've incorporated electronic data collection into the methods and automated the storage, which allows us to process the data faster in a way that we can finish the abundance survey and have an abundance estimate basically in the same day. And then something else that we've really worked on, we've spent a lot of time refining the area estimates and assessing razor clam habitat. And it's something that we want to get into more for our next level of, you know, monitoring with this. But I'll let Holly tell you a little bit about our habitat assessment stuff.
Okay, just quickly here. This is an aerial image of our Nanalchik South Beach. And so we've used this aerial imagery to assess the habitat. Of course, we see it on the beach while we're doing the abundance surveys, but then we can come back and map out habitat that we know can't contain razor clams. It's really obvious that those rocks don't have any razor clams in them. Maybe less obvious, but definitely easy to see when you're out on the beach, is an exposed coal seam. So there's not actually any sand there, and you know, a razor clam can't thrive there at all. So we put this in ArcGIS and we draw out the bad habitat. And then we overlay it onto our study area. So you can see, you know, the beach strips there underneath. The pink is the bad habitat where we've determined that a razor clam can't live. And so we subtract that bad habitat from our area estimates of each stratum so that we're not expanding our density or our abundance to an area that can't actually contain a razor clam.
Okay, the other primary data set besides the sport fishery data is the age and length composition from hand dug samples that we've been collecting for a long time. And we've done a little bit of refinement to this process, but not as much as the abundance surveys. But just really quickly, one important thing to understand with our age and length composition data, so there's a collection in the field to mimic the harvest. And then there's a lab portion where we're coming back and measuring each annulus of every clam back in the lab. So we've kind of refined our collection to a degree, tried to standardize that to a period in mid-June that allows a more simple comparison to the average length of clams annually from 1 year to the next. Another thing that we've done is just with our collaboration with APU and others is we've just put more people on the beach when we're doing these surveys, and with a variety of skill sets, all the way from somebody that has never dug razor clams all the way to an expert like Holly. And then the last thing that we've really focused on, this has more been an exercise in better understanding growth. We had another master's graduate student with APU go through recently. It's done some growth assessment and we've turned it a little bit more. So this is more of an exercise of reassessing historical data, but it's something that we've been improving. So.
Okay. So we've gone over our different data sets, our abundance data and our age and length data. And so now what do we do with this data, or what are we trying to figure out? So there's a lot going on with these populations of razor clams on East Cook Inlet beaches, and we don't know or understand everything that happens to them. We don't know exactly where they come from, or, you know, exactly when they settle out of the water column, a lot of huge variables, but we can use this data to figure out the births and the deaths and some of the growth. So this is a manager's approach to population dynamics. It's nice and simple. So say we start with a certain number of razor clams at the beginning of the year, and then we have some deaths or some natural mortality. So yeah, these are the razor clams that are leaving the beach, regardless of whether the fishery is open to harvest or not. So of course, after some of our razor clams die, we're left with less. But at the same time, we have razor clams growing. They're growing from, you know, juvenile clams into new adult clams. So they graduate into the size of clam that we call adults. So we've got these new adults. And of course, we have the adults that were already there that survived. So we also have our old adults. And then we have our baby clams that join the beach each year. So those three groups make up our population. If things go well, then we're back to the same number or more razor clams than we were prior to the natural mortality.
Some important things to consider here is, you know, our lack of understanding of the biological mechanisms of populations of clams in East Cook Inlet. You know, we don't really know if Nanilchik clams replace Nanilchik clams, or if East Cook Inlet clams are replaced by clams from Cordova or not. So really, our manager's approach to population dynamics is just trying to maintain an abundance of clams in a particular beach section. I think that's a really important distinction. Razor clams overall, you know, at some point they're in a larval stage, free floating, and then they settle onto a beach. And, you know, we've got to make some assumptions at some point when they are there, you know, that these populations stay there, they're closed, there's no emigration or immigration. So yeah, think about it in those ways. So taking that population dynamics kind of sets the stage for our stock assessment platform and developing productivity indices to really assess what's going on. And so with our refinement in those two data sets, there's the paired data at both Nanilchik and Clam Gulch beaches, right? And so we've taken the same data that we've had for a long time, and we've gone through and refined them, and including doing further analyses to better understand them. And what that results in are these 9 productivity indices that we've developed. And so the abundance survey data provides us abundance estimates of both juvenile and adult clams. And so then we can look at the recruitment of juvenile clams to the beach and the recruitment of adult clams from the juvenile life stage to the adult life stage. And we can look at the natural mortality of both juvenile and adult clams within just the abundance survey data. So there's are the indices of productivity that we can use to assess what's going on. And then in the age and length data, you know, it basically boils down to the 3 things that we're doing. So you get age, length, and then the combination of the two, you get growth. And so we can look at those as productivity indices. I think another thing to, you know, think about, you know, with the manager's approach here is that a lot of stock assessment work in fisheries really comes down to modeling. And what we've done with the refining of the methods and analyses is we've gone back out into the field, collected more data, and done analyses with empirical data instead of trying to assess what's going on through modeling. And so I think it's the benefit of having the managers be researchers in this situation.
So we're going to move on to some of the results finally. I'm going to go over our recent abundance estimates. So I'm going to go over our 3 main beaches, starting with Nanilchik South here, both juvenile and adult abundances. So the historical fishery average, or the 1989 to 2012, you know, average abundance for juvenile razor clams at Nanilchik South was about 250,000 juvenile razor clams on this beach each year. Since the fishery has closed, that has bumped up to almost 900,000 juvenile razor clams on this beach annually. And looking at the adults, you know, prior to the fishery closure in the historical fishery period, about 475,000 adult razor clams on the Nilchik South each year. Since 2015, that has remained much lower at about 180,000. So over with the next two beaches, you're going to see the same trend where the juvenile razor clams have increased since 2015 and the adult abundances have remained very depressed. In the Nilchik North, the juveniles are about 1.1 million historically. They've increased slightly to about 1.4 million. The adults were historically at almost 2 million clams annually, and they've decreased to about 700,000 each year since 2015. And then our last beach that we've consistently done abundance surveys on is Clam Gulch North. So in the historical fishery, there are about 1.4 million juveniles every year. Since then, we've gone way up to almost 6 million juveniles annually on Clam Gulch North. We had the largest juvenile abundance estimate ever in 2019. There was almost 13 million juvenile razor clams on that beach that year. And then the adults were just over 2 million, and they've remained very low despite the large juvenile abundances and are hovering just under about 300,000 razor clams.
Okay, the abundance data for juveniles and adults at both beaches, we've reworked those to give us a little bit more information by looking at different life stages within each juveniles and adults. And so first thing that popped up with us with, you know, doing these surveys more frequently is the clams less than 30 millimeters that we're referring to as minis are really hard to assess. And we're not really sure if we are fully detecting all of those on the beach or if they're fully recruited to the beach by that size. And so we've seen very inconsistent numbers going from one year to the next with these little ones. And so the juvenile estimates that Holly just showed you are not including those anymore. And so our juvenile size clam is actually from 30 to just under 80 millimeters, the adult size clam. And juvenile clams, through assessment of growth, we can look and break those into a small size and then a pre-recruit size. And a pre-recruit size being a clam that's juvenile this year and will be the adult size next year that would support harvest in a fishery. And so that's a process that we do after the fact. For adult clams, we have two life stage categories as well, new and an old. This is a category that we're actually calling out on the beach. In the aging process, we're going back to last year's annulus to see if they were a juvenile or adult clam in the previous year. And so if it was a juvenile clam, then it's a new adult this year. So these abundances you can see here, they're just tweaked to show you how we're using them, but they're ultimately going to help us better assess recruitment and natural mortality.
So like Mike mentioned, we use these life stages and we also use the age composition of these clams to estimate the natural mortality of juveniles and adults separately. So we'll start with looking at the natural mortality rates of juvenile razor clams recently. So one of the first things to notice here, the juvenile natural mortality rates at Clam Gulch North tend to be less than they are at Nilchik South in general and within the same year. The Nilchik South natural mortality for juveniles is highly variable, you know, ranging from 20% of them dying in a year to 75%. And then the other thing is that it can be really different between these beaches within the same year. So for example, the most recent winter, you know, 71% of the juveniles died at Nilchik South and only 21% of them died at Clam Gulch North. Moving on to look at the adult data, the Nilchik South natural mortality for adults is also highly variable. The other thing to see here, it's fairly high for both beaches in all of these years, with the exception of 2017 and 18. But the most recent two winters were extremely high. So in both years at both beaches, 70% died at Nanaltuk South and 88% died at Clam Gulch North. It's more variable at Nanaltuk South, but you know, alternating between the adults or juveniles faring better. The averages from 2015 till now, the juvenile natural mortality for at Nanaltuk is about twice what it is over at Clam Gulch North. The other thing to point out, again, just as we had one or two years at these beaches with relatively low rates of natural mortality, but otherwise, since 2011, we've been experiencing consistently high rates of it.
A couple of thoughts on natural mortality, and if you're paying attention, I'm sure these questions are popping into your head, but first would be the most common question that we get here is, what's causing this really high rate of natural mortality? And it's something that we want to spend more time working on and collaborating with other scientists to try to get a better handle on what's actually causing it. We obviously feel like these are environmentally driven conditions, particularly given that the fishery is closed. And so I think the two major things that we've noticed that have likely changed over time for East Cook Inlet razor clams is, one is just the habitat stability that we're seeing on the beach. You know, these razor clams live in highly exposed sandy intertidal locations that are exposed to big wind surf or seas that are able to dislodge them from the substrate, like we saw that storm event in 2010. It's likely that stuff like that is occurring more frequently and then we just don't see it. And seeing some of that habitat mapping that we're doing too, we're noticing that something like the coal seam at Nanaltuk South is more prevalent at times than others. And so, you know, sand moves a lot and razor clams are exposed to that. And so I do think that that's a key thing, but it's probably not the only thing. Another big thing that's changed over time in East Cook Inlet, obviously, is the expansion of sea otters moving up further in Cook Inlet from Kachemak Bay and Lower Cook Inlet. They're routinely seen in the surf at Nanaltuk now where they never were before. How much they're contributing, not really sure, and it's something we want to work at with other scientists. The second one should be for natural mortalities. What was the historical rate? You know, if this is the rates we're seeing now, is that what we were seeing before? And we can show you, Holly has a figure a little later of some age composition data that we have from the hand dug samples. And you'll see that based on those ages, some assessment, it's likely that natural mortality was somewhere between 20 and 30% annually. And it probably varied from year to year, like we're seeing here, and between the beaches, it was probably different. But the rates that we're seeing now are on average 2 to 3 times greater than that. And in some years, it's 5 to 6 times greater than that. And so I think we need to think about it in a context that it's likely more than one thing that's contributing to these high rates of natural mortality in some years. And it's accumulation of several things not being very good for razor clams to persist on these beaches.